Today is the yahrzeit of the Nachum of Chernobyl, the author of the Ma'or Einayim. So he's our ancestor back, I think, depending on which way you take it, either 8 generations or from another way, 9 generations, a third way, 10 generations, were his descendants like six times. Anyhow, so the Ma'or Einayim comments, just in introduction, I've shared this with you before, but the Ma'or Einayim is the one who says that if a person cannot travel to the grave of a certain tzaddik to pray, that they shouldn't be concerned about it, because the main bonding that a person would do with the tzaddik is through their words of Torah. And he uses the following logic. He says, after all, when a person goes and travels to a grave site, what's left behind in the grave is, you know, if anything at all, it's the person's, the remainder of the person's physical being. How closely related is that really to the person's essence? Whereas the person's Divrei Torah, the words of Torah that they taught, have a much deeper connection with the essence of the person than their body, which is left behind in this world. So he said, if a person really wants to bond with the life of a tzaddik after they're gone, they should learn their words of Torah and then use that as the catalyst to bond with that, the life of that tzaddik. And then a person can request whatever requests they would do if they were at their person's gravesite. So due to the fact that today is the yahrzeit of the Ma'or Einayim, when we were in Ukraine, I don't know what it is, 5-6 years ago, so we actually traveled to Chernobyl to visit the gravesite of Menachem. We had to be tested for radioactivity on our way out. I'm not sure what they would have done with us if we would have tested positive. I have serious doubts about the choice of where they decided to put up the oil, the grave site of Menachem. There's no marking. There's no cemetery. They destroyed everything, and they worked off of the testimony of some people. So What we will do here today is going to be much more effective than traveling back to Chernobyl. First of all, there is no risk of radioactivity here today. And we'll have a deeper connection. So Reb Nachum's comment is the opening words of the parsha, where the pasuk says, Hashem says to Avram, Lech Lecha. Go. So Rashi is troubled by the repetition of Lech Lecha. What does this language of Lech Lecha mean? Go to you. Hashem could have easily have said to Avram, V'yem Hashem al Avram, Lech, go. What is Lech Lecha? Go for you. So Rashi says, Lehanoscha uletevoscha. Go for your pleasure and for your good. Now what's interesting is that this becomes a great source of controversy in the commentaries. In fact, according to some, we know that this was either the first or the second of the 10 tests that Avram had. And according to some of the commentaries, this really was the test. The test was, what would be Avram's motivation in going? Would Avram go because Hashem told him to go? Or would Avram go because it's good for him? And then in truth, Hashem built into the his command to Avram, the essence of the test. Avram, I want you to go. And I want you to go because it's going to be good for you. You're going to become a wealthy man. You're going to become a famous man. And later, the Torah testifies that Avram went like Hashem commanded, meaning Avram did not fall for the ulterior motives that Hashem presented, but rather Avram said, I'm not doing it because it's going to be good for me. I'm not doing it because I'm going to become wealthy. I'm not doing it because I'm going to become famous. I'm doing it because I want to fulfill the will of Hashem. So the Ma'or Einayim is troubled by the same question as to why Hashem would tell Avram to do something for his own good. After all, he says, The Torah testifies about Avram. Hashem says he's Avram Ohavi. He's Avram who loves me. So why would Hashem need to say to him, Avram, I want you to go because it's going to be good for you? Hashem could have just said to him, I want you to go because I want you to go. And due to the fact that Avram loves Hashem, that Avram will do it. So, the Mornayim builds a premise. We've talked about this in the past. I can remember going back. Remember when we started this Sunday morning class? We did it up in Glendale, in Whitefish Bay. So we discussed that. It's got to be 3-4 years ago at least. So we discussed a premise that actually the Mornayim mentions here in passing, but the Bnei Yisoskar really elaborates on this concept, a very fascinating concept, and that is that you can move physical things. So you can move a cup from one place to another, and it no longer exists in the previous place, it only exists in the new place. Spiritual things cannot be moved. They can only be duplicated. So we know that our neshamas are, there's an olam haneshamas, there's a world of souls where the neshamas sit and bask in the light of the Shekhinah. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the soul and puts it into a human being, into a physical body, and has it operate in this world. So the Bnei Yisoskar says that Hashem doesn't take the neshama from up there and put it into the body because he can't move spiritual things. But we are all walking around with a duplicate soul. So you know that feeling where we really never know where we are? Because we really don't. It's interesting that the...
What about the opposite? What about the deja vu that you...
All of it can stem from this. In fact, the Piasetsna says a very practical thing. He says, you know, you have this feeling oftentimes where I'm in a really bad mood and I can't figure out why. I remember there was something I was upset about several days ago. Right? And I'm in a really bad mood about it. I can't even remember why. Now, logic would dictate that if you can't remember why you're in a bad mood, logic would say don't be in a bad mood. So he says that it's this concept, that what's the goal is that the neshama above and the neshama below are supposed to be in sync with one another. There's a constant contact. There's a fiber optic strand that runs from one to the other, and they're supposed to be synchronized with one another. But when we're out of sync, when we've lost contact, when the call is coming, phone home, and we're not communicating, there is this lack of feeling. Something's out of whack. Great mind Stephen Wright wants to know, where is whack? That's that feeling. Anyways, the Bnei Yisoskar says that the mission in life is to line up the neshama above with the neshama below. Says the Mornayim, a phenomenal thing. Says you find 3 times in the Torah that Hashem, in calling out to someone, calls them by their name twice. Avram, Avram, Yaakov, Yaakov, Moshe, Moshe. Now for parents, this isn't such a big surprise. Right? Because when we want to get the kids to make their beds, 2 is a start. But clearly when you're dealing with Avram and Yaakov and Moshe, that's not what's going on. What the Mornayim says is that when you have duplicate names, Avram, Avram, Yaakov, Yaakov, Moshe, Moshe, that at that moment, that person is in perfect lineup with the neshama above and the neshama below, to the point where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to speak to both components of the neshama identically, with the same intimacy, with the same power, at the same time. And as a result, he repeats the name twice because he's able to speak to both components of the neshama as if they're exactly in the same place, at the same time, with the same clarity, with the same intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah. So the Mornayim continues with just a kind of a casual conversation as to what is the purpose of life. So he says, that the goal of life is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes this lofty soul and places it into a crass physical body, because the person, despite the desires and interests of the body, the neshama will choose to serve Hashem and will not deny what he calls the seal of the king. The seal of the king here is he's referring to the neshama. The person's not going to falsify the seal. So if a person views their neshama as being the emblem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they were placed as an emissary from HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world to represent Hashem's interests, so we're delegates from above. We're all walking around with a medal on our lapel saying to us, we are here representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we understand that every action that we take is in essence a representation of our mission from Hashem to this world. So then that person is as loyal here as his neshama is loyal above. And that's, he says, Avram. Avram is that Avram never forgot his mission to this world, and as a result, his neshama here was perfectly synchronized with his neshama above. Step two. The Maharanim continues. And this is really a concept that's brought in the earliest Kabbalistic sources, the Zohar and others, and is repeated by Ramchal, Ramesh Chaim Litzato, in many of the works of his ethics, not even in his non-Kabbalistic works. And that is the concept of Nahama Dichsufa. Nahama Dichsufa means bread of shame. He says, while it is true that the neshama above, before it comes down in its physical form, sits and basks in the light of the Shechina. That's all neshamas do upstairs. They sit and enjoy. They get big beach chairs. And they sit and enjoy living in God's light. That's what neshamas do best. So one, the question is obvious. If life can be so good for a neshama, why would the Ribbono Shel Olam possibly take the risk of taking a lofty, exalted, pure neshama, putting it into a crass body, and sending it down to a world which is full of pitfalls and potholes and all kinds of spiritual devastation? Why take that risk? Why would the Ribbono Shel Olam do that to a neshama? So therefore, the Zohar explains that while it is true that the neshama enjoys all that intimacy above, but it is called Nahama Dichisufa. It's bread of shame. It is undeserved pleasure. The neshama exists, it enjoys, but everyone knows the feeling of receiving something for nothing. And the larger the gift, the larger the giver, the more undeserving we are, the worse it feels. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that in order to give the neshama the ultimate pleasure, which is ultimately having a relationship with Him, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only way to really do it right is to make the neshama deserve what it's going to get. Let me just finish the thought. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam created something called Bechira. I'm going to create, let's just for this stage, we'll go into stage three in a moment, but for this stage of the Maharanim, let's call it the obstacle course. What I'm going to do is, in order to allow the neshama to deserve this pleasure, I'm going to place it into an obstacle course where it's going to be an ethical and a moral obstacle course, where it's going to have the ability to choose good, meaning a relationship with me, or evil, distance from me, and it's going to be very enticing. And the neshama is going to be able to choose either one or the other, and then when it comes back from that mission, it will then be deserving of having a relationship with me, so that it can go back into the stage where it is Nehenah Meziva Shechina, where it's going to bask in the light of the Shechina, but this time, it's going to deserve it. And that's the ultimate gift, therefore, really is constantly bound with the concept of free choice. Because without free choice, without the ability to err, there really does not exist the true, deserving relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, says the Maharnaim, that the Zohar says, Avram do nishmasa, Avram is the neshama. Okay, so let's take Avram away from whatever physical manifestation we have in our minds. And Hashem says to the neshama, lech lecha. You ever remember the A.B. Rottenberg's Neshamala song? Come with me, little neshamala. That's based on this Maranaim. I don't know if he's seen the Maranaim. But Hashem says to the neshama, lech lecha. I got to send you on a mission. But I want you to know it's going to be lech. I'm sending you, but it's lecha. It's for your own good. I want you to be able to deserve the relationship that we're creating. And unless I send you down into that physical world full of all of its temptations and traps, you won't be deserving of the relationship with me. And as a result, lech lecha, I'm telling you all, as horrible as it seems, as painful as it seems, as risky as it seems, I'm sending you down for your own good. Step three, up until now, the way the Maharnaim painted the picture is that you have a neshama, the neshama needs to deserve what it is going to get. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts the neshama into an obstacle course. In stage three, the Maharnaim says that there are two types of obstacle courses in the world. There's one where you try avoiding the obstacles. There's another one where the obstacles themselves become the means to propel oneself onto the next level. And that you can't get to the next level without the earlier stages. So he says that many of us curse the obstacles. We're resentful of the temptations. We're resentful of the fact that we need to take the time out to deal with our physical needs. Says the Maharnaim, we need to understand that in Yiddishkeit, it's not an issue of avoidance alone, although there are clearly things that need to be avoided, but that we need to understand that the artzius of the Jew, the physical life of the Jew, is part of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not just avoiding it, but it's utilizing this world to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and I shared with the fellas yesterday that there was one of the Hasidic greats in the time of the Baal Shem Tov. They were both friends and Talmidim. One was Pinchas of Karet, and the other was Remechel of Zlotchev. And Remechel of Zlotchev took ill, slipped into a coma. Now, the two of them did not get on. Remechel and Reb Pinchas had something going. They were constantly at each other's necks. When Reb Mechala took ill to such a degree, so the Zlotchev Magid's children decided that they needed to counsel with Reb Pinchas and ask him what to do. So they traveled to Karetz. Of course, their father was in a coma. He didn't know the difference. They came to Karetz, and they walked into Reb Pinchas. Reb Pinchas said that in an effort of spiritual growth, Reb Mechala had taken an oath that he would not eat dairy foods. And the dairy industry brought their case before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, it's not right. Here, Reb Mechala had utilized them to serve Hashem. He ate dairy foods, and then with that energy was able to serve Hashem. And they no longer had that service, and it's because of that prosecution that Reb Mechala is in a coma, that he's that ill. They should call a Beis Din in and nullify the vow, and he'll be cured. And then he said, and by the way, tell your father that the reason he no longer sees me during his davening when his neshama is elevated in heaven, although he used to once upon, we used to meet up there, tell him that the reason is that I've created my own pathway and I no longer travel with the other neshamas. So it's not because I'm not there, it's just I built my own highway. Anyway, they come back in to the Zlotshev Magid. They don't say anything. Zlotshev Magid opens his eyes and says, okay, what did Reb Pinchas say? So they told him what he said. So he called the Beis Din in and nullified his vow. And about the second comment, as far as his davening goes, Remechala said, I knew he was great. I didn't realize that he had the ability to create his own, you know, his own superhighway. So physical things in the life of great people are not just obstacles. They are methods of connection. They become tools that allow the person to connect through the physical. So in the pasuk here where Hashem says, Lech Lecha, that I want you to understand that it's going to be good for your soul, the next word is Me'artzecha. The next word is you're going to go, you're going to travel Me'artzecha from your physicality. Your physicality, your life in the physical world is going to become the catalyst. It's going to become the tool through which you're going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says that's the meaning. David HaMelech says, Eshalech lifnei Hashem ba'artz Yisachayim. We say it in Tehillim. I will walk before Hashem in the land of the living. He says, what's the difference between the land of the living and the land of the dying? It has to do with how a person approaches physicality. A person who serves Hashem, utilizing the physical world, is living in Artz Yisachayim, is living in the land of the living. But it's not only living in the land of the living, but it's eshalech lifnei Hashem, I become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through my service in the physical world. It's not something to avoid, it's something to embrace and to utilize in the service of Hashem. And there's a famous story that's told of a misnagid, a prominent Rav, a Torah scholar, who had, from his observations, had come to the conclusion that the Baal Shem Tov's ways were a departure from tradition, and he commanded that the townspeople, the people in his city, the Talmid HaChacham, that no one was allowed to allow the Baal Shem Tov to stay in their homes when he came to visit. So the Baal Shem Tov came through town, couldn't find a place to stay, and I had to rent a room in the inn, and realized what had happened, and sent his messenger, his gabbai, to summon the rabbi. So of course the rabbi refused to come. So the gabbai came back to the Baal Shem Tov and said, the rabbi is not coming. So the Baal Shem Tov said to him, tell him that just earlier tonight he was asked a serious halachic question and he paskined wrong, he ruled incorrectly, the result of which was a chiyuv kares. He erred in an area which held literally a death penalty for the person who he ruled for. And if he wants to realize what he needs to do to rectify that situation, he should come and see me. So the gabbai went back to the rabbi and said to him, tonight you were asked the question and you paskin the question. And of course the rabbi looked up to Allah and realized that the Baal Shem Tov was right. Not that he was right, but obviously the Baal Shem Tov knew about something that there was no way for him to really know about. So he came, and what he had done a day earlier when he had heard that the Baal Shem Tov was coming was, as he was walking on the street, he picked up stones along the way that he was going to throw at the Baal Shem Tov's carriage as it was riding through town. So his pockets were full of these stones. goes to the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov shows him how he had erred, and that the error was the result of the fact that his approach to the Baal Shem Tov was based in error. And he gave him a tikkun, how to rectify his way. And on the way out, as he was walking back home, he started emptying his pockets of these rocks. And he hears somebody walking behind him, and the Baal Shem Tov is following him, picking up the rocks. So he turned around and said, "Rebbe, what are you doing?" So he said, "The fact is that you picked up those rocks with the full sincerity of your heart, thinking that what you were doing was right. Stones that were gathered for the sake of heaven should not be strewn among the common stones of the street." So the Baal Shem Tov went picking up all those stones, so he felt that they were no longer just common stones. Now, if that's the case, with stones that were picked up in error, what about all the rest of the physical things that we touch, reciting a bracha over them, that we utilize with that energy to go ahead and perform a mitzvah afterwards? All of those things become part of one's service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're in stage two. The Maharnaim was addressing this world as an obstacle course. In stage three, the Maharnaim is saying it is not only an obstacle course, but it's the most fascinating obstacle course, because the obstacles themselves become propellants that allow the person to become much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there are two types of obstacles in the world. One of them is an obstacle that needs to be avoided, which clearly there is a whole area of Jewish life of the things which are prohibited, and those things are just that, they are obstacles. But there is also the entire realm of those things which are permissible, and those things can be used, as he quotes, "As halach lifnei Hashem, I will walk before Hashem ba'artzis achayim, in the land of the living." He then proceeds to add another dimension here. Hashem says to Avram, "Ve'escha l'goy gadol, I'll make you into a great nation." So he quotes the pasuk in Tzfanya, a very famous pasuk. The pasuk says, "Oz ahapach el ha'amim safa brura," that in the times of Mashiach, Hashem will transform the nations into clear speech, yachad, all of them together, likrei kulam b'shem hamyuchad, that all the nations of the world will call out in the name of Hashem. So the Maharnaim analyzes this and says that the Jewish people and the nations of the world have this area in common. The fact that we all eat and we all live in the physical world and need to utilize the physical world is an area which is common to us. So whereas the mitzvahs that we have are unique to Jews, but the common areas of our physical lives is not unique to Jews. And he says the way, and it's interesting, my father alluded to this yesterday in his drasha. There is a responsibility upon the Jewish people to impact the world. So many make the error of thinking that we have to be out on street corners passing out pamphlets, or whatever method you want to take. The Maharnaim says here that when a Jew interacts with the physical world and is able to separate in his interaction with the physical world, is able to utilize the physical world in such a way that we elevate the physical to a service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the result of that is that we are cleaning up the atmosphere. If you want to talk about going green, in the spiritual sense, every time we say a bracha over food, every time we utilize the physical world in our service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are purifying the atmosphere, which will result in the fact that when the non-Jew approaches their physical life, it's going to have greater spiritual overtones. And ultimately, when we do enough of this, then the non-Jewish world will call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu together with us. So if we want to impact the non-Jewish world, it's not by making a lot of noise. It's by finding that those areas that we have in common with them and doing them right, and as a result, it's going to impact the next time that a non-Jew picks up an apple. It's no longer going to be the same apple as it was before we said a bracha on an apple a continent away. So he says that's the ultimate is going to be, if it's going to be lech lecha me'artzecha, if a Jew is going to be propelled through his physical interaction, the result of that is going to be ve'escha l'goy gadol. Ultimately, we will have impacted the entire world to call out in Hashem's name, because we will have sanctified all gashmius, all physical things, to the point where when the non-Jew interacts with it, that it's going to turn into a spiritual experience for them. I wanted to share with you one other